Nothing further.
Mr. Abrams, any redirect?
Well, I did.
Please limit it to Mr. Cumless Cross.
Well, there's something we've got to do in terms of the question that I asked about admitting exhibits, and I didn't have that information as a procedural point when I asked the question to Mr. Ferris, so if you don't mind, Mr. Camacho, I'd like to take this opportunity to have him identify.
At this point in the proceedings, Mr. Abrams, your redirect is limited to the issues testified to under Mr. Cunliffe's cross-examination of the witness. So please proceed. If you have any redirect, please do so at this time.
We may have a second question.
Need a brief recess, Mr.
Abrams?
Okay, so can we go off the record? Going off the record, it's
everything.
It is 11:08 a.m. on September the 28th, 2009. We are in the hearing for the government's motion for confirmation of substantial interest. Mr. Cunliffe has just finished his cross-examination of Mr. Perez. Mr. Larry Perez is still on the witness stand. Mr. Perez, I remind you that you are still under oath. And let me ask again, Mr. Abrams, do we have any redirect?
Yes, sir.
Please
proceed,
Mr. Abrams.
I want to show Mr. Cunliffe the declaration of substantial interest that was made a part of the procurement record in this matter on trial. I'd ask Mr. Cunliffe if he has any objection to the admission of that into evidence.
I do not.
Then it's offered. This would be the...
Okay, so hey, what exhibit is that again? Exhibit, which one?
If I may approach the...
Sure.
It's a four-page document called the Declaration of Substantial Interest. It has Mr. Perez's signature on it. He could identify it if I had to, but since it's already part of the procurement record, maybe it could just come in and be considered evidence.
Okay, so... What was this exhibit marked as?
We didn't mark it as an exhibit because, again, it was part of the procurement record, so we felt that it could be taken into. To be honest with you, I wasn't sure how you wanted to proceed, whether you wanted each and every exhibit in the procurement record marked.
So do you have the exhibit? Okay, so we have Exhibit A, which was previously admitted, and do we have a copy of the actual exhibit that was presented to Mr. Perez?
The lease?
Yes, the lease. Okay.
We have an extra copy of that.
Yes, please, I'd like that. Please show it to Mr. Cunliffe. If he approves that, then that's the exhibit. And then I guess this would be Exhibit B, is that correct?
The lease. You can just
copy. Okay. Okay, so could you please leave that here, please?
Yes.
Okay,
this
so.
Is marked Exhibit I, but it, you know.
Okay, so this is government's Exhibit I. This is what's admitted?
Yes, sir.
It was joint admission. It's also a...
Exhibit A for the appellate. Okay, okay, very well. That's been admitted. Exhibit K, is that correct, for the purchasing agency will be the declaration of substantial, correct? Let me just mark this as Exhibit K. Okay, so Exhibit K is here. Mr. Abrams, you may proceed.
No, I have no questions about the exhibit, Mr. Camacho. I just wanted to hold Mr. Harris under oath up here until we knew that we were going to admit this or whether he had to identify it. But since Mr. Camacho has no objection to it,
okay. So it's admitted under stipulation by both parties. Okay. Please proceed. Is that it?
No, one further.
Okay, could you leave Exhibit K here, please?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Weisenberger. Okay.
This is our Exhibit B. You know, we missed it on our exhibit list, which is a memo from Mr. Ferris to various recipients. Mr. Cunliffe has no objection to that. Is it admitted into the record as the evidence?
Mr. Cunliffe, as to Exhibit B.
Is that the memorandum? Dated August 12th, 2009, I believe, by Mr. Perez's signature.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I have no objection.
Okay, so Exhibit B is hereby admitted.
May I take these two back?
Those are going to remain copies, as those are the ones that will be used during the... we're going to keep them, yes. That's good. Mr. Abrams, are you done?
Our Exhibit H will be the final one. Exhibit H on our exhibit list. Any objection? And there's no objection.
Okay. So Exhibit H, which is a memorandum from Raymond Padua, professional engineer, dated August 14, 2009, is hereby entered into the record by stipulation of the parties. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so entered. Anything else, Mr. Abrams?
Nothing.
Okay. All right. Mr. Perez, as... Yes.
Could I have a short video?
You may.
These facilities, these assets belong to the entity that that uses it. For example, the GPSS facilities are owned by the GPSS organization. The Guam Public Library is owned. The assets belong to them. So normally, DPW's role is more of a contracting officer, contracting authority. We would They would request from the DPW to do renovations on their building, and DPW would in turn say, we need to identify the funding, what is the kind of scoping, and then we would actually put out an RFP or an invitation to bid to construct the renovation or the new construction.
So in the case of JFK, DPW would not have gone down, initiated an RFP for that. In this case, GPSS would approach the legislature to pass the law to identify funding and possibly with DPW's assistance.
That's correct. Actually, that's the case for almost everything that DPW does when it helps another agency, a fellow agency, is because we need the authorization and we need the funding. In the case of Public Law 29114, it was very explicit in who the roles that every entity, what GPSS's role was, what DDA's role was, and what DPW's role was. So Public Law 29114 is a classic example of normally how these fundings and authorizations are granted for constructing or renovating buildings.
So you're like the quarterback?
Yes.
Okay. Now, talk about the keeping facility, the temporary facility. So was it your understanding that, I think you testified that it was a temporary facility?
That's correct.
And temporary meaning 1 year?
Temporary meaning it's to house the JFK students until its permanent facility is constructed.
And that was the intent. You understand that was the intent behind the leasing of the teaching facility
right.
for the temporary school.
That's correct. It was twofold reason. One is, first and foremost, to get the students, the JFK students, out of GW school because of the double sessions and the unacceptable school conditions at GW just because the JFK students were sharing the facility. So first and foremost, to remedy the crisis at GW by putting it in a facility outside of GW and to put it in a facility that would house the JFK students until such time that the permanent school is constructed.
And Mr. Perez, you testified that it was your understanding that this was an appropriation for rent for 1 year under that interim lease, correct?
That's correct.
And I'm going to read you a passage from the lease, which is exhibit, the government exhibit I, and it's in section 7A as an apple. Right, the heading is right of earlier termination. It reads as follows. No party shall have the right to terminate this lease prior to June 30th, 2010. Thereafter, either party shall have the right to terminate this at any time upon giving the other party a minimum of 120 days written notice prior to the termination date. Now, is this section consistent with your understanding that the lease could be terminated after 1 year? 1 year being the date of July, after June 30th, 2010.
Yes, it's actually, it is very consistent with my understanding from my colleagues. As much as I've not read the document, but yes, it's very consistent in terms of the ability for the government to sever without having any further obligation for the balance of this, projected 10-year lease.
And I actually want to ask you one more question about before we proceed with the lease issue. In terms of procurement, in this case the JFK pool, there are some of the procurement processes that you can do, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And this JFK procurement, with this, the timing in terms of the amount of time it took to get into RFP and to negotiate the business and get very close to an award, would you consider this in sort of normal course of business, or would you say this was fast track?
This is a very compressed and fast-track procurement. It's very rare that statutorily DPW is forced to build something within a 9-month time frame. That's one. The second is normally for most of our tenders, for RFPs especially, the average churn for RFPs from the time we advertise to the time we actually award is normally about a 9-month window. For small ticket items, we're talking just a design request for proposal for design work. For construction work, it's about the same time frame from the time we advertise to the time we award a contract for construction. And again, this includes all the pre-bid conferences, the addendas, and everything up until bid opening or RFP opening or RFP submissions. Now, that's for single ticket items. We're talking design only or construction only. But when you're dealing with turnkey finance, design, build, maintain, tenders, and you're dealing with four major components, and you're saying do this in 30 days advertise, if I'm reading that, I think it's 90 days, but 30 or 90 days, to do all this activity, and then to have the construct or a facility of this magnitude and cost in 9 months is normally just the construction alone for the scoping that was outlined is about 24 months. We are being required to build it in 9 months.
And so, Mr. Karras, given the ability and the resources of your department, we can all say that you were able to expedite and fast track it to the best of the department's ability.
Normally we don't, but when there's so much attention to the situation of the kids, basically the direction that I've been given and the direction I've given my staff is that you have a crisis of kids that are out of a school. There's a shutdown of their school. They're exacerbating a situation at GW. They're put into a temporary facility for no more than a year, and we need to get something built soon, ASAP. All our efforts have been, we sort of like downplayed some of the other activities that we do at DPW and put this one tender to the front burner and focus all our energy and resources to make sure that we get this thing out soonest. So our MO from the onset has been, this is urgent, emergent, get it out now.
Okay. Now, going back to the insurance facility, do you have an opinion as to whether, that is an adequate facility for the JFK students, the 2,300 students, given the knowledge of the procurement and the needs of JFK schools?
I do not have an opinion in terms of the facilities. I mean, other than basic facilities that a high school should have, it is deficient. But in terms of the school curricula and school related, I cannot opine on that.
I'm not talking about the curriculum. I'm talking about the physical aspects of the school. I should clarify that. It's an office building, isn't it?
Okay, it's not the ideal situation for a school classroom. It is not the ideal situation for a gymnasium, a cafeteria, whereas the permanent JFK we're building from the ground up to what the industry standards call for in terms of the codes, in terms of the school requirements and the uses and different functions that they have. But in terms of the buildings that feed them, we must keep in mind what those structures were constructed for.
And what was it?
Those were for office buildings predominantly. It was used by the military. And what was done up there was they retrofitted it to be functional, but not the ideal.
There was a line of questioning about think the question was, well, what would it cost you if you had to throw IDC off? If the project were awarded to IDC and you had to throw IDC off the project, do you remember that that line of question?
Yes.
And I'm going to read, you're familiar with the procurement code?
Yes, I am.
I'm sure you don't have it memorized, so I'll read a portion of it to you. Section 5452 is by GPA. Refers to section on remedies after award. And is your understanding that, I'll just read it, subsection 1. If the person awarded the contract has not acted fraudulently or in bad faith, 1, the contract may be ratified under terms provided it is determined that in doing so it is in the best interest of the territory. And is it your understanding that the BCW, if it were to award the contract to IDC, and that IDC proceeded with construction, that provided that it did not have problems in bad faith, the contract may be ratified. So IDC would not necessarily be kicked off the project as it were. Subsection 2 of that same statute states, the contract may be terminated and the person awarded the contract shall be compensated for the actual expenses reasonably incurred under the contract plus a reasonable profit prior to determination. So that is another option, but if there's no fraud or the parties did not act in bad faith, then there is provision in the law to allow them to continue, provided that it's in the best interest of the territory. Is that your understanding?
That is.
And that in that instance, GCIS would have remedies. This remedy would be for any monetary damages that it could establish in the court of law. But that would separately track from, when I say separately track, it would not necessarily stop the proceedings with the construction process. They have an avenue they have a remedy, which is to go to court and establish the damages if there are any at all. And that doesn't necessarily mean everything has to come to a halt.
That's correct. That's correct.
And that part of the process is in your understanding that the OPA, if they were, this OPA were to confirm the substantial interest, the department, your department could proceed with a procurement. And that if there's any damages, they have an avenue, and that is the court, not necessarily an injunction.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Cunliffe, any recourse?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. These proceedings are still not over, I'm going to release you as a witness, okay, but I'm going to admonish you not to discuss your testimony with any of the other witnesses or with the parties until the completion of these proceedings. You understand that?
I understand.
Okay. And you're excused. As an administrative matter, when do the parties propose to have lunch? As we, it's 11:30, I'm going to call the next witness, or ask Mr. Abrams to call the next witness, but when are you planning on having lunch?
We'll have lunch when you say we'll have lunch.
Well, I propose to have, basically go forward with the next witness until 1, and then come back. And then come back at 2:30, which would actually give you an hour and a half of lunch. Is that acceptable to the party?
I believe the witnesses will be
taking
lunch. I don't know.
Okay, so then we will proceed as far as we can go. We are going to break for lunch at 1 o'clock, and then we will then reconvene at 2:30 this afternoon, okay?
So we'll go from now until 1?
That's correct.
Okay.
So, Mr. Abrams, your next witness?
We would call Anthony Bloss.
Okay, Mr. Bloss, could you call Mr. Anthony Bloss, please? That's correct. Thank you.
That's why I'm going to do the direct examination.
Okay, Mr. Bloss, could you please take the, thank you for coming today, could you please take the stand and just remain standing so you can be sworn in?
Could you please state your full name?
Anthony C. Bloss.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Please have a seat, Mr. Bloss.
Mr. Bloss, why don't you hand me what you have in your hand?
It won't be me.
Okay.
Please have a seat, and I ask you to, as these proceedings are being tape recorded, I ask you to speak clearly and speak into the mic. You may proceed, Mr. Weisenberger, with your direct examination.
Good morning, Mr. Bloss.
Good morning.
Mr. Bloss, are you employed by the government of Guam?
Yes.
In what capacity?
As the administrator of Guam Economic Development Authority.
What is the Guam Economic Development Authority?
It's the social financial manager of the government of Guam. It's also taking care of different missions assigned by public law.
As the central manager of the government of Guam's finances, specifically, what does that entail? You should go out and do.
Well, for the government of Guam, we provide all financing for specifically financing for different agencies and issues that are outlined by law and requested by the different respective agencies.
In regard to the financing, construction, and leaseback of the John F. Kennedy High School, the new John F. Kennedy High School, did GEDA have a role in that?
Yes, GEDA had a role.
And what was GEDA's role with regard to the construction, finance, and leaseback of the John F. Kennedy High School?
Pursuant to law and Public Law 29-114 and as the central financial manager, we were required to facilitate the financing for this project.
Okay. When you say facilitate the financing of this project, do you mean that you were responsible for going out and getting the financing for this project?
What we're doing is we have to do what we can for the best interests of the government of Guam.
Okay. In this project,
and the people of Guam.
In this project, was there a? I understand that, but was GEDA responsible itself for going out and financing the construction of the John F. Kennedy High School?
GEDA provides the financing at the request of Public Works and DOE.
Who was responsible for going out and actually acquiring the financing for this particular construction?
I guess the respondent, selected respondent
and
for this project.
Who was that?
IBC.
Okay. So IBC was responsible for getting the financing for the building of the high school?
Yes.
And GEDA's role with IBC would be what?
I guess IBC was the selected respondent pursuant to this this law, this project.
Did you work with the International Bridge Corporation in any way while they attempted to acquire financing?
Can you go back and tell me?
Did you work or did GEDA work with the International Bridge Corporation, IBC, in any way when they attempted to acquire financing for this project?
No.
You didn't assist them at all?
We didn't assist them. I would say we didn't assist during the whole selection. I wasn't part of that. We only did when we were selected as the selected company. Then what we've done is we have to do our part for GEDA.
And that's what I'm trying to determine.
Okay.
I want
sure.
you to assist us in understanding your part. You testify that IBC was responsible for acquiring finance.
Yes.
You testified that you assisted or facilitated that process.
Yes.
In what way, briefly, did DITA facilitate the process of assisting IDC to acquire finance?
Okay. What we've done here, as the Central Financial Manager for the Government of Guam, my staff and I, we're working with IDC to continue to proceed with the JFK project. And for us, we had our bond counsel, and of course our financial advisors, who are our staff. We work with them to get the best deal that we can for the people of Guam.
Why did they need your help?
For us, we want to get the best cost, affordable cost, most reasonable cost, the best, lower cost for the sake of the taxpayers.
Was there a way in which you could assist them in getting a lower cost for the financing?
Well, for us, the ultimate effect here is the government of Guam has a direct relationship, as we have to, we're involved in making sure we get the best deal. And of course, the investors look at us. It's Guam's story. We want the best story that we've done, like we did with the Lola Pola and the landfill issue.
Was IBC attempting to get financing that required a qualification for a municipal bond rate? Were they trying to get some kind of tax exempt?
Yes,
they were.
And I guess my staff can speak to that issue. I'm more important.
I'm going to ask you to speak to it this morning.
Yes, okay. We wanted to.
Are municipal tax exempt bonds less expensive than commercial bonds?
Yes, we want the municipal.
Are they less expensive?
Less expensive.
Yes. Are they less expensive?
Less expensive.
So if they had gotten municipal tax-free bonds, it would cost the government of Guam less money to build John F. Kennedy High School.
That's why I said we want the tax-free municipal securities.
So in IBC's attempt to get tax-free municipal securities, did the investors require some assurance that the government of Guam was a participant in this
yes.
building?
Yes.
Is that a role via play?
Yes.
Thank you. Who were the other partners on the government's team working with IBC for this project?
We have a bond counsel, Standards, Ed Harrington. We also have our director of Bureau of Budget and Management, Dr. Jonas, Shannon Patton, our legal counsel.
What about other government agencies?
Public Works, Director of Public Works, Andy Nargura.
And any other government agencies with the Department of Education involved?
We were working with DPW and I guess DOE was involved. We're doing our interaction with talked about the Guam story, right? We spoke to Dr. Tina Schaefer, but she was soft. I don't know, but by a long distance phone call.
You've mentioned the Guam story. Who did you tell the Guam story to with regard to the building of the John F. Kennedy High School?
Well, for us, we had, of course, our financial advisor, Arlene Capo, and myself, our staff.
Who did you tell it to? Don't
tell me. We told it to the investors. All the investors, the municipal, the properties, house. We want to some comfort that they're going to get the best. Why should we invest in Guam? And we did that for the different bond issues, and they were very comfortable that this is a secure investment.
So let me see if I understand this. Gita's role was not only in supporting IBC to receive a municipal bond rating or rankings, so that it would be tax exempt, is that right?
I see that rating is our rating, the Guam's rating.
It's the government of Guam's
rating. Guam's, yeah.
And you also had to help investors appreciate that Guam was a safe place to invest. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Glove, did you, at the request of Larry Paris, write a letter in support of the substantial interest of the territory that this procurement could go forward?
Yes.
I'm wondering if Mr. Cunliffe would agree that Exhibit G, which is a letter written by Anthony Glove on, I believe it's August 14, 2009, we could stipulate that it was submitted into evidence, or?
I have no objection to it.
For the record, Mr. Camacho, we would ask that Exhibit G would be entered into evidence at this time and then stipulated by the parties.
Okay, pursuant to the stipulation of the parties, Exhibit, the purchasing agency's Exhibit G is hereby entered into evidence. Please use this exhibit when you present said exhibit to the witnesses. Thank you.
I just want to do a couple of things. Mr. Blaub, I'm going to hand you what's been marked as Exhibit G. Just make sure, Mr. Blaub, that that's the letter that you prepared for Mr. Perez.
Yes, this is the letter.
Thank you. Mr. Blaub, the letter speaks for itself, so we're not going to talk too much about it. However, did your staff assist you in the preparation of that letter?
Yes.
Okay. So you didn't write it all yourself?
No.
Did you read it before you signed it?
Of course.
Okay. Do you agree with the statements in there?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think the letter speaks for itself, Mr. Glass, but I'm a little troubled by the letter, okay, and by one of the statements in there, and so let's try to see if we can understand that. If you'll turn to the second page of the letter, the first full paragraph, investor perception,
sure.
See that? In about the middle of that paragraph, it starts, in fact, bond counsel has stated that in order to move forward with the financing and provide a legal opinion as to the validity of the securities, the protest must be dismissed or resolved and deemed not able to be appealed. You wrote that, or your staff wrote that for you?
Yes.
Okay. That's still true today?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess I'm wondering why you're in support of this substantial interest declaration, since apparently your bond counsel's advising you that we're not going to be able to go forward with financing probably until this has been all resolved. So help me understand what it is we are going to be able to do if the Office of Public Accountability confirms the substantial interest. Why are you interested in the confirmation of substantial interest?
Yeah, so for us, what we want to do, we want the best thing we can get for the people of Guam, number one, and number two, and we completely agree, we wholeheartedly agree with the substantial interest in this whole issue, and we want to move forward. And right now, because we're precluded from speaking to our investors and brokers, office and other investors who believe in Guam, who believe in our story, we want to engage them and let them know what we're doing, and we need to give some comfort that these things when we get the clean disclosure, we can move forward.
Okay. when the protest in this matter was filed, where were you? Where were you on the globe of the world?
We're right there in New York during the pre-pricing of these certificates of participation.
Was International Bridge Corporation there as well?
Yes.
And when you say pre-pricing, you were working with investors who had come forward and were interested in loaning money to IBC, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And then there was a protest filed, is that correct?
Yes.
And then you were stopped from doing anything else?
Mm-hmm. We were precluded from pursuing this project.
Okay. And so you've never been able to get back to investors or the bond market or anybody on this matter, have you?
We can't speak to them anymore, and that's a concern for us.
And you'd like to?
Oh, we'd love to. We'd go back and keep the relationship with the same investors who helped deliver two major bond financing.
What two major bond financing?
The so-called Lola Cola bond issue and the landfill bond issue.
And there are presumably other investments coming up for the government bond?
It's a very major issue for the people of Guam, and with the major build up with all the other items that people want to pursue with financing, we have to continue to have a relationship with the investors, the other brokers, houses, to come back and invest in this beautiful and we call home.
Even though Mr. Dirks is our bond counsel, is that right?
That's right.
That's the one you were referring to in your letter, is that right?
That's right.
Even though he doesn't believe it's going to be possible to move forward, are you nonetheless, if the public auditor confirms the substantial interest, intending to attempt to move forward along with IBC in any event?
That's right. And for us, we completely agree with the substantial interest issue. And if IBC wants to pursue, they can do that themselves.
And well, you support them as you did in this past attempt to finance? If you're given permission to do so by a
conference. Yes. Yes.
So it's pretty important from your point of view for the territory of Guam, for the government of Guam, that you be able to re-engage with the market on this matter and others.
Yes, sir. Sure.
I have no further. Oh, it's in evidence. I'm sorry. I have no further questions, Mr. Camacho. Thank you.
Mr. Connell? Excuse me. Ms. Tang. Any direct?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Connell. Cross examination.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Bloss.
Good morning.
The last question that you were asked. Mr. Weisenberger asked you whether it was important for you as the administrator of GITA to re-engage with the bond people on this matter and others. Do you remember that question?
Yes.
You're not prevented from engaging with bond counsel or bond investors on any other projects, are you?
We are engaged in other issues, yeah.
You're not prevented from being engaged in other issues by this case.
Not on this one, on other financing issues. We're talking about different apples.
Right. So you can talk to anybody you want to about bonds or anything else, as long as it's not about this issue, isn't
not
it?
Not in this issue.
Okay. Now, the fact that you can't talk to IBC or potential investors doesn't prevent IBC from talking to potential investors or anybody else about trying to get funding for this project. Isn't that true?
Yes.
Objection. Actually, I think that calls for a legal opinion, and I'm I don't believe Mr. Watts' testimony is accurate. I don't think IPC is in a position to talk to him either.
Mr. Cummins, any response?
He's answered the question. You know, you can take it, he can make the argument he wants to do, but I don't think that the order of Larry Perez telling people that he's not going to negotiate any further prevents IBC or anybody else from continuing to try to get funding.
Well, I do agree that Mr. Bloss has, in fact, answered the question, and I overrule the objection as it's untimely. Please proceed, Mr. Cummins.
Thank you.
Now,
can
I take a motion to strike the answer?
Proceed, Mr. Abrams.
Well, the reason is, again, the protest that Mr. Cornell's client filed and another protest by DEFF functions as a freeze. And it functions as a freeze on the whole procurement process. And to me, from a legal perspective, and this witness couldn't testify from a legal perspective, it's impossible for the procurement process in any manifestation to proceed at all. And I think the scope of this day is very broad. And for Mr. Cummins to ask a lay witness as to the legal effect of that state and the legal effect of IBC trying to secure project finance in view of the frozen procurement proceedings is going into very shallow water. Now, it's true that the objection was not made until the question was asked and answered, but that sometimes happens when counsel are concurring while the direct examination is going on. But that doesn't detract from the impermissible nature of the question and the inadmissible nature of the answer. Because here we have a lay witness sanctifying a breach of the stay that was occasioned by the protest that Mr. Kerner filed by seeking additional project finance while the stay is in effect. That just can't happen. And I don't think this witness is competent to testify, and Mr. Weisenberger and I feel that his answer should be stricken from the record on that basis, and maybe the objection could have made sooner, but we're not always, you know, there are times when he wants to ask me a question, and for that reason we was a little bit late with the objection, but the interest of preserving the record in a proper form would be the overriding interest. I would think that's my suggestion to you, Mr.
Cummins, on the motion to strike.
Yes, sir. We would oppose that motion. As indicated, the question was asked, it was answered, and as the hearing officer, you can give it whatever weight you deem is appropriate in this case. It doesn't need to be stricken from this matter.
I'm going to overrule the objection, and Mr. Cummins, please proceed with your questioning.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Bloss, when GEDA goes out to the market for bonding, and I think you've given a couple examples, COLA bonding and the landfill or whatever it's called, those are funding that are specifically being issued to the government of Guam, is that correct?
Yes.
And in this case, as I understand it, the certificates of participation, they're not bonds in this case, is that correct? They're certificates of participation?
Yes, certificates of participation.
Okay. And essentially, people will agree to participate in the funding of this project, get a certificate, and every time the government of Guam makes a payment, those people will get a return on whatever their investment was.
Yes.
So when the government goes out, in this case, the government was just guaranteeing that you would make the payments over the next 30 years, so these participants would be paid the percentage on their certificates. Is that correct?
In this case, you're talking about the certificates of participation. Our environment here is the government Guam's issue. You know, investors, if they want to invest in this issue, they want to make sure that they get the best deal for the investor as well as the government Guam.
Right. But the government of Guam was really only guaranteeing the payments on these certificates.
Objection, I think there is any outside that says that substantial interest was any of the issues of merit, given the areas that are at this point still confidential, and the purposes of the potential proceeding.
We weren't in the objection, also for the reasons stated by counsel, but in addition to that, I'm not sure that, we'll stick with those things, that they're outside the scope of the direct, and they're not getting into this extension and this question. We're getting into the objection.
Mr. Cunnell? Tell us in response.
Yes. On direct examination, Mr. Bloss testified that he was in New York doing pre-pricing of certificates of participation, that it was a loan, they were loaning money to IBC, and I'm just trying to get an understanding so that everybody understands how this process was going to work, the government's involvement in it, and what Mr. Bloss has testified to was to try to get the best pricing for the government of Guam, so that we can address the issues of what is the best pricing on the certificate of on the substantial interest to the government, because that's one of the allegations in their substantial interest, that this will affect the investors and this will affect our opinion of people of us in the market and issues like that are part of their issues of substantial interest.
Well, I'm going to sustain the objection in part. And the part I'm going to sustain is please limit the line of questioning to just the general nature of the certificates as you testified to. And keep in mind, I remind the parties this is not the hearing on the merits. We are coming to that, but this isn't that hearing. Okay? Please proceed.
Thank you. So, as I understand it, the government is the role of GIDA on behalf of Guam was to guarantee the payments on these certificates of participation.
We're getting into transactional terms of the deal, as opposed to just the general nature of issuing bonds. He's trying to elicit the terms of the contract, which is right now confidential under the terms.
May I also address that point? Mr. Camacho, we're here at this particular hearing to talk about the overriding substantial interest of the territory in allowing the bid procurement procedure to go ahead. But that doesn't mean that Mr. Cunnell has carte blanche to go into the intricacies of what is going to constitute the finance package. What he's doing now is he's going to say, well, how is this finance package going to work? Is GIDA going to do this? Is IBC going to do that? And on into the fine print and the fine details of how this all financing is going to work, when I think, and I'm just suggesting that maybe the scope of this proceeding is to establish merely that that it's not a moot point, that to confirm Mr. Perez's determination of a substantial interest is not an empty gesture, because there are things to be done. There's very meaningful progress to be made if we're allowed to proceed with the bid procurement process. And these questions go far beyond that, and that's why I think Ms. Tang's objection should be well taken.
Mr. Cunnell?
Thank you. I'm not trying to get into any specific details. We have a letter which has been moved into evidence which discusses these matters. I'm just trying to determine what it is his role was with regard to this financing package, so it's on the record as to what that involvement was, and then talk to him about how he determines that what the best interest of the financial aspects of this to the government of Guam is, because it's in his substantial interest letter. This is all contained in his letter. I'm just going to cross-examine him on what he's written has been introduced into evidence.
Well, Mr. Camacho, aren't I correct in recalling that this witness has already answered that question about what EDA's role is? EDA's role is to facilitate and support IBC's ability to organize financing. And that's all we need to know. We don't need to know how it all works and what the mechanisms are in the financial package that may be ultimately put in place, and that's what these questions are doing, and I think we've gone far enough down that road.
And if I may, the letter does not go into the details. It only references the certificate or instruction in the second paragraph of page 2, which merely states, since then, as you know, the first project was called just prior to the official sale period of the certificate, and thus investors are notified that the sale would be delayed until they notice. No other reference is in there, so it's not true to say that, to represent that this letter basically discloses all of the pertinent terms of transaction. And that's an issue for another day. Thank you.
Objection sustained. Mr. Cunliffe, I believe he has talked to some great length as to the role EDA played. And please be reminded that this is not the hearing on the merits. Please proceed.
Mr. Camacho, if I might, that was exactly what I asked him. What was the role that EDA was playing? And my understanding on the direct examination was they were guaranteeing this debt. That's all. And that's all I'm asking. Isn't that what their role was?
Okay, you may. Okay, I do recall him prior to the objection asking what his role was. Please proceed with that question.
Was it the role of EDA to guarantee payments on these certificates
for this whole issue? That this is. Providing facilities and financing, and financial advisor, staff can speak more specifically on this issue.
Now, you said that you were attempting, on behalf of the government, to obtain the best financing for the government and the people of Guam.
Yes.
Now, you, as the administrator of EDA, have been involved in other bonds, procurement of other bond processes, as you've discussed.
Yes.
And we have never had difficulty in the recent history of selling any bonds that have been floated by the government of Guam. Isn't that true?
We have difficulties on one occasion.
And when was that?
On another financing issue that happened in December of 2008.
Okay. Was that the sale of bonds or just the obtaining of
them? I'm going to object, Mr. Camacho. Whether EDA had difficulties and what kind of difficulties they were, and what were the facts and circumstances surrounding the situation where those difficulties presented themselves is irrelevant. What we're here to decide today is whether there's a substantial interest confirmation to go ahead with this particular bid procurement procedure, and whether another financing effort by EDA was successful or unsuccessful, difficult or easy, would be an opposite to the question here. I object as to relevance.
Mr. Cunliffe?
Yes, in their letter they talk about the difficulty of maybe selling these, having difficulty with investors. Their declaration of substantial interest in paragraph 9 says a long-term disruption of the efforts already taken by International Bridge and the municipal bond market to successfully finance the cost may result in a significant increase of the cost of the financing or in the alternative significantly diminish the ability to finance this project in the manner and time set forth. And in 10, the ability to bring to a successful conclusion to the efforts of IBC and as part of the government of Guam will likely affect Guam's relationship with investors and other related parties, not only within the municipal market, but also globally. The government's image as a stable business partner in this market may be damaged.
Not some other financing deal that they might have had trouble with, because it's totally different than this.
It's
a turnkey construction project.
I'm not asking him about the difficulty of other projects.
He certainly was.
He came up with that answer, and I had a I was trying to get around whether that was a selling of bonds issue or some other issue. That's all I was trying to find out.
I don't have any objections to Mr. Cohen's questions as to difficulties and the role of dealing with this particular project with IBC and why this substantial interest would allow the bid performer procedure to move ahead. And that's not how I understood this last question, John.
I'm going to sustain the objection. I find that the other project that was being inquired into is a bit outside the relevancy of these for these proceedings. Please proceed with your questions, Mr. Cohen.
Thank you.